The Infrastructure and Tourism Appropriations Subcommittee will come to the order. Ms. Sabrina, please call the roll.
Chair Williamson.
Here.
Vice Chair Romo.
Here.
Representatives Arrington.
Here.
Bell.
Here.
Casilla.
Here.
Cheney.
Here.
Daly. Excused. Drake.
Right here.
Ranking Member Hart.
Here.
Representatives Lamarca.
Here.
McFarland.
Here.
Mooney.
Here.
Persons Malika.
Here.
Placencia. Silvers.
Here.
Quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
All right, members, good morning. Good to see everybody this morning. Today, we're going to have two presentations. One is going to be from Highway Safety on the Motor Modernization Project. The other is going to be from DOT regarding the Work Program Integration Initiative. Both of these are large, multi-year information technology projects. After we complete the presentations, we'll have time for questions. Then we'll move on to our consent agenda for our appropriations project bills. As a reminder, any member wishing to vote no on any bill on the agenda, please make sure you fill out a nay vote consent agenda form and submit it to staff prior to voting. And we have those forms right here. And then also, I forgot, if you have any cell phones on you, please put them on vibrate or turn those off. We're going to move right into our presentations. First, we're going to take up the Department of Transportation. We have Secretary Kevin Tebow with us this morning. Secretary Tebow, good morning to you. It's good to see you, and you're recognized, sir.
Good morning. Let me get this going here. All right. Well, good morning, Chairman. Thank you. Thank you for having us here. I wanted to give you an update and presentation related to, as the chairman said, the department's work program integration initiative. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to give this update. First, I want to inform you that the project is currently in the procurement process with the invitation to negotiate released on February 1st. Therefore, we are kind of in the cone of silence. I'll do my
best. Secretary Tebow, can you put your mic up just a little bit? It's probably the...
There you go. How's that?
Can everybody hear him? Okay.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
Sure. Not a problem. So we are in the procurement phase, so I will do my best to answer any questions you may have. However, I may need to make some notes of some of your questions and get back to you after I coordinate with our legal team. Our Office of Work Program and Budget manages the department's five-year work program, which consists of over 11,000 active contracts and over $12 billion in current commitments and $50 billion in future commitments. The technology systems that we use to manage our program are key to our success, and which is why we call it WIPI. Work Program Integration Initiative. We like our acronyms at DOT. That's why WIPI is not a nice to have, but it's a must have. You have all heard me say that innovation is vital to fulfilling the department's mission of moving people and goods. When our current system was nearing its breaking point, we saw it as an opportunity to introduce innovation. We asked ourselves, is there a way to improve our tools to provide real-time data? Is there a way to build logic into our systems to maximize the amount of transportation we get out of each and every dollar? And is there a way to provide our partners with better data? This is where we started when we kicked off the Work Program Integration Initiative. We were focused on how we can make sure we always made the best use of revenue. By spending less time and effort building, delivering, and communicating our work program, keeping our systems online so our team is productive, and then finally making sure we get the most, again, transportation of every tax dollar. So I wanted to kind of give you an opportunity to describe why this initiative is a must-have. Our system that we have today was built about 25 years ago. And is running on a 1980s era mainframe technology platform. Some of us who remember our programming days in college remember BASIC, This system is using COBOL. Yeah, a couple of you, Mr. Representative, that's an old system. And other outdated green screen components that we're using today to manage our multi-billion dollar work program. Hiring technology experts with the knowledge and experience to work on these old systems is expensive to procure and, most importantly, difficult to find. With the existing system having frequent breakdowns, it can take a half a day to fix problems that happened overnight. Sometimes, like for instance, we have to run a snapshot of and balance our work program to present to you by statute. And so when we run that snapshot, we actually run it overnight because it takes several hours to run. And sometimes we'll have a breakdown and we've got to pause, reset, and redo again. And so obviously that's a big hit to productivity. Repairs are frequent, and sometimes disruptions happen multiple times per week. Just in the past 2 months, just to give you a snapshot, we have experienced a system failure 7 times. Each time the system failed, it took an average of 3 hours to repair. That's a grand total of 21 hours. So just think about the time and the staff that we have waiting and trying to get this done and how much lost productivity we had just in that period of time. So what are the major objectives of replacing our financial system? First and foremost, it needs to reduce the risk of system breakdown. We must improve our connections with the internal DOT systems and our partners. Our partners include the Federal Highway Administration, our local governments, our metropolitan planning organizations, which many of you are familiar with, and our vendors. With many of our partners running updated and modern systems, it's important for us to invest and keep up as well. To make sure we are maximizing the taxpayer dollars, as I mentioned before, we need to see what is happening across the department in real time. We have a lot of transportation projects currently under construction and a lot more on the way. Keeping our information in real time allows us to make the best decisions on how to use our revenue. As you may have heard in our other presentations, we are a cash to commitment agency. Again, that means that when we enter into a contract, we know that the cash will be there to pay the bills when they come due, instead of having all sitting in a bank at one time. For that to work, we have to have good financial models. And that's why one of our major objectives is to improve our revenue and expenditure forecasting. The better our financial models are, the less cash we need to keep on hand to cover the unexpected. So that is cash then we can put right away back into projects for each one of your districts, again, maximizing those taxpayer dollars. And then lastly, we need to improve data quality and access to the public and our partners. We can do that through better dashboards, easy access to information, and easy to understand presentations. That, I will tell you, is one of the biggest objectives of this initiative. So really, if you think about the goals of this initiative, is to provide a better tool for our users, one that is intuitive and easy to use, that provides flexibility and adaptive to change. This is important when new policies or laws are put into place. Provides customized reporting, provides greater transparency, making it easier to audit data and keep the public's trust. And it modernizes the platform, making it easier to keep our system on the cutting edge of technology. So this is kind of a graphic representation of the financial management system we have in place today. As you can see in this graphic, the complex components of the initiative will be 4 financial management subsystems: the Work Program Administration, the Federal Authorization Management System, the Project Cost Management System, and the Federal Programs Management System. We also will have a cash forecasting system, a contract funds management system, integration with other department and external systems. 2 important external systems that this initiative will connect to are the statewide accounting system, soon to be known as Florida PALM, and the Federal Highways Fiscal Management Information System. So Federal highway system is modern and regularly updated. With our old system, we risk becoming too outdated to properly interface with their system. And this is critical since federal funds represent 25% of our funding sources. So when you look at the project scope of the Work Program Integration Initiative, you see all the functions around the wheel here that we have to cover. The software and services must support the department's ability to plan, manage, and allocate funds and budget, manage the contractual commitments on transportation projects, manage the financial aspects of all transportation projects from concept to concrete, perform agency-specific general accounting and cost accounting functions to deliver the five-year work program, forecast the department's cash flow, manage our federal programs and other department funding partners, prioritize the projects within the work program, and finally measure and report agency performance results of the work program. So what have we done to date? So the teams have documented all the business processes that will need to be built into the Work Program Integration Initiative. And at the department, we look for opportunities to improve and create efficiencies. So with this initiative, the team identified numerous improvements in our business processes and eliminated a significant number of processes that were no longer needed. A huge undertaking was the development of over 4,500 business requirements and the inventory of 1,900 other system functions that will be integrated into this initiative. The teams also purchased tools to integrate computing assets to the new solution and developed an invitation to negotiate. So, as I mentioned at the beginning of my presentation, we are in the midst of a procurement right now for this initiative. We initiated and posted an invitation to negotiate on February 1st, and vendor questions were due this past Monday, March 1st. Vendors now have until the middle of next month, April 12th, to submit their responses, and contract execution is targeted for about a year from now, August 15th, 2022. And again, we're targeting the go-live date to be July 1st of 2026. So with that, Chair and committee members, I offer up any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. Do I have any questions for Secretary Tebow? Quiet bunch today. I have one question for you. And I know you spoke a little bit about some of the things that have been done so far, but you know, there's been a $30 million investment, or you know, $30 million has been spent so far on this project. What would you say are the accomplishments or the biggest accomplishments that have been made with that $30 million? Because that's a lot of money. And you know, what's the return that the state is getting with that $30 million?
So Mr. Chairman, I think the biggest value we've got is now we have a much, from that effort, much tighter scope, much tighter to be able to then have this negotiation with these vendors as part of this process, and therefore should have a tighter deliverable that will absolutely meet the needs of the state.
Do we have any other questions for Secretary Tebow? Okay, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
All right, members, that is going to move us to the Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles. We have a presentation on the motorist motorization by Terrence Samuel, the Director of the Office of Motorist Motorization. Mr. Samuel, you're recognized, sir. Good to see you.
Good morning. Chair Williamson, Vice Chair Rommel, Ranking Member Hart, and committee members, thank you for this opportunity to provide you with an overview and also an update of the Motorist Modernization Program. Also presenting with me today is Chad Hutchinson, who is the agency's Chief Technology Officer. So again, thank you for this opportunity. Motorist Modernization is a multi-phase initiative that positions the department to better serve the citizens of Florida and also offer new services to businesses that we were not offering previously. And in order for me to give you sort of an overview of the Motorist Modernization Initiative, I also need to give you a little background on the agency and agency history. Years ago, when these systems were developed, 20-plus years ago, there was no integration between the driver's license system and the motor vehicle system. As I mentioned, they were developed 20-plus years ago. Organizationally, the department consisted of a division of driver's license and a division of motor vehicles. As laws changed, it became more apparent that more integration was needed between the two systems. Therefore, the division of driver's license and the division of motor vehicles merged to become the division of motor services. So you can say that the business already has gone through their initial or a phase of modernization, however, but the IT department did not until now. The systems that support tax collectors throughout the state and various industry stakeholders and support other areas of the department to this day are two separate systems using two separate databases, which also allows for more complexity in our systems. And I want to point your attention to three of these. I'm not going to go through all of these. Insufficient use of resources. Our resources spend a large amount of time manually intervening to keep the current system up and operational. Also want to point your attention to number five, inability to provide customers comprehensive data. It is quite possible, and I say this in all my presentations, for you to come into an office, perform a motor vehicle transaction, leave, and find out a week or two later there's a problem with your driving record. Because two separate databases, they're not connected the way they should, so we can't give that comprehensive look, that comprehensive data that you need when you come into an office. And also, speaking of data, there are numerous state and federal agencies that depend on the data from the department. And the last one that I'll bring to your attention is very important. Inability to meet customer, number six, inability to meet customer demand for self-service. My team and I didn't just develop the system in a vacuum. We traveled around the state. We would go to offices. We would watch people process transactions. And often a customer would have a follow-up transaction, and I hear the customer ask, can I do this online? Do I have to come back in the office? 95% of the time, the answer is going to be yes, you need to come into the office. So that's something we wanted to address with Motorist Modernization as well. So phase one, as I mentioned, is a multi-phase initiative. Phase one has been centered around driver's license. We have redesigned the driver's license issuance system. That's the system that is used statewide to issue driver's license and ID cards throughout the state. We have designed a new customer portal, which I'm going to go into more detail here later. And also, we have a new customer-centric database. Combining those databases into one is what we're working toward. Some of the benefits, of course, we want it to be sustainable. But I also want to bring your attention to expanding service delivery options. What we call this is, the technical term is multi-channel citizen engagement is the technical term. And it simply means that citizens want and expect to engage government on their terms. They want to do this in person. They want to do it by phone. They want to do it by mobile device or chatbots, whatever the situation may be. And frequently, government has kind of lagged behind private industry when it comes to those additional opportunities for customers. Some of the other benefits I want to talk to you about as well, of course, we want to have tools for our workforce to better serve the public, but also we want to reduce the software development effort by utilizing modern technology. Through the years, we have added numerous workarounds to the motor vehicle and driver's license systems. There have been patches, workarounds, and this is simply added to the complexity that we've had to deal with throughout the years. So we want to reduce the software development effort that we have. And, of course, we want to take advantage of cloud computing as we move forward. And so when we talk about the portal, no one at the department, as I mentioned previously in other presentations, no one at the department could have predicted we'd be in the midst of a pandemic. However, the services that we're expanding online are extremely timely for our customers at this point. In 2020, now this is prior to the customer portal, we saw an increase, a 33% increase in the use of our website that we currently have that has very limited functionality for customers. So we're expanding, and we hope to see the use of our online customer service our customers' transactions grow. Currently, we have 4 driver's license systems online. Customers will be able to go online and clear certain sanctions. And a sanction on your record can be failure to pay a traffic ticket, toll violation, leaving the scene of an accident, failure to comply with a court order at school. Customers will have the ability to do this at home, print their clearance letter, and be done with it, not having to visit an office. Now, it's not all sanctions, but a large number of them, customers will be able to do this. And of course, you know, I talked to you about the issue of coming into an office and leaving and not knowing there's a problem with your record. We're also going to allow customers to get notifications. They can sign up for notifications of issues with their record. I mentioned businesses earlier. Currently, we do not offer any online issuance services for commercial driver's license holders. These customers must go into an office. So on the portal now, we're going to have it where a person can come into an office. They can renew or replace a non-hazmat commercial driver's license, and customers can also replace a commercial learner's permit. So we're excited about these opportunities. And last but certainly not least, we have streamlined the process for out-of-state and out-of-country active duty military personnel who need to apply for an extension. So let's like to pause here and talk about some of the accomplishments for phase one. We were appropriated $37.3 million for phase one, so thank you for your support. We have not submitted the budget request for phase one of motorist modernization because we have completed software development, testing, and we have entered the implementation phase for the new Orion system. And Orion stands for the Online Registration and Identity Operating Network. So thanks again for your support. Modernization projects are difficult for several reasons. Many states, I remember coming and presenting at the start of this project, and I talked about all of the states that had failures. Some states have had multiple failures. So we're happy that we're in the point that we're now implementing this. And they're difficult because you're dealing with legacy technology. Often the knowledge base, when these systems were developed 20, 25, 30 years ago, those people have since retired. And so that knowledge base is missing from the agencies. A lot of states go out and purchase a system, which we decided not to do. We would purchase in cases on a smaller scale if there were pieces of software we could buy. But states purchase systems and then try to make their business processes fit the new system that they just bought. Your smaller state, you can maybe get away with that, but some of the larger states, that's not going to work. It's going to be too much disruption in your business processes. And so in the early stages of this project, we worked closely with the legislature and legislative staff members to get the project moving in a positive direction. The legislative staff members recommended, of course, we have to use a IVNV vendor, independent verification and validation. They perform a monthly assessment of the project and where we are. Department also, at the recommendation of legislative staff, we had to undergo a readiness assessment to ensure that the department was ready to move forward with this initiative, and we did that. And the legislative staff also recommended that we use a system integrator. We had made the decision, there was no software out there at the time that we felt like we wanted to buy. As a matter of fact, many of those people, who I can't remember now because they're now out of business, I'm glad we didn't go that route, and we decided to write it ourselves, but the legislative staff recommended that we use a system integrator, and that's worked out well for us. So again, thank you for your support. So with the accomplishments, we've onboarded 500-plus insurance companies to the new system. All department-managed offices are now using the new Orion Deal issuance system. The portal has been implemented in what we call a soft launch mode. We haven't done any type of advertising or anything at this point because we want to slowly bring people on board. We want to fix issues as we discover them. The only thing the department's done, we've mailed out letters to folks who have an issue with their record, and at the bottom we've given them the link to the new portal. And due to that alone, we as of last night, we had over 15,000 accounts that have been created, again with no marketing. We have started each and every week we're implementing in tax collector offices. And Mr. Chair, this weekend, we're implementing in Santa Rosa, our first location in Santa Rosa County. So, and that will be at the Milton location. So there's still a lot of work to be done. In 2 weeks, we'll be halfway through our implementation. We're scheduled to complete the driver's license implementation at the end of April. So thank you. So that's our update for phase one. for phase two. Our budget request for this year to continue to work on phase two is $10.6 million. We have been appropriated thus far $32.8 million so far. The total anticipated cost for phase two is $60 million. Phase two is all about titles and registrations, motor vehicles. We're going to rewrite the title and registration system, which is used to issue vehicle and vessel titles and registrations throughout the state. We're going to be adding transactions, this time related to motor vehicles, to the portal. And we are purchasing, remember I said where it made sense to buy a system, we would buy it. We're purchasing a system that supports the motor carriers. Those are the big rigs, the big trucks. We're purchasing a system for that. And of course, which we've received a lot of questions about lately, that we're going to go in more detail here in a second with Mr. Hutchison, is we're implementing a new mobile driver's license as part of phase two. So I want to talk a little bit about the portal for phase two. I mentioned we're going to expand transactions on the motor vehicle transactions in the portal, duplicate titles online, personalized plate inquiries. You can get alerts on your motor vehicle record. For businesses, we address businesses in phase one. We want to try to address businesses in phase two. Fleet management. So if I'm a small to medium-sized business, I have 60, 70 vehicles that I don't want to have to come to the office every year and decide which vehicle I want to renew. I can do it all through the portal. If I want to remove a vehicle from my fleet, I can do that as well. So we're looking forward to providing these services online. So just another way that we're planning on providing additional services. And also, there's services that we're planning for rental car agencies as well. And now I want to go into a little more detail about the Florida Smart ID. We received, you know, lots of inquiries about this. Several states now, I think at last count, I counted maybe 20, 21 states that are either looking at legislation or doing some kind of study, or they are working on a pilot or looking for a vendor. Several states and various countries are working to develop a mobile driver's license. As I stated previously, I think a couple of weeks ago, I don't believe this to be a fad. I don't think it's simply the latest technical gadget. I believe this would be a form of identity that would be accepted globally. I believe TSA, I believe, is looking at this as well, and Chad's going to go into more detail about this later. But what we're trying to do with the pilot that we're trying to get off the ground here is just simply set the foundation to get this started, because it's all based upon your identity, digital identity. So the department received legislative authority to proceed with this effort in 2014, thanks to Senator Brandis. However, we have had a delay simply because we needed to wait until the standards were developed so the mobile driver's license can be interoperable. These standards were developed by the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators and ISO. So the standards allow me to take my mobile driver's license, and if I get stopped for a traffic stop in North Carolina or Georgia, wherever it may be, that when that officer walks up to the car, if that state has also developed against the standards, there should be no problem whatsoever with that officer reading my mobile driver's license. And I mentioned Mr. Hutchison is going to go into a little more detail. And now, with that, I'll have Chad Hutchison, our CTO, come up and give you a high-level technical overview of how it all works. Thank you.
Mr. Hutchison, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. So what I think I want to do with this is kind of describe what is Smart ID from a technical perspective, obviously high level, but I'm going to start out by doing that by saying what it's not, because there's a lot of myths. He mentioned some of the other states that have implemented this, and maybe you've seen different flavors of this. Sometimes it's called a digital wallet. Sometimes it's called a digital driver's license. Sometimes it's called a mobile driver's license. You'll see many flavors out there and many attempts at this. And what it's not is, it's not this, right? It's not a visual representation of a credential of your driver's license. In fact, one of the states I like to reference in these presentations is Louisiana. I'm not picking on Louisiana. I mean, they were trying to do what they thought they wanted to do with this, and they wanted to get out there in front of this. And they did an implementation of a mobile driver's license that was very much visual. So the way theirs works is it, you know, you have a picture of the physical credential. Well, you can imagine, you know, 13-year-olds now with Photoshop can fake that out. So that's not a good idea. That's not what we're doing. That is not what this is about. What this is about is it's about a cryptographic process, a verification between devices. So in the very simple terms, it's a application that's installed on a phone. And you'll see two images there. One is called the Smart ID. That's the representation cryptographically of your credential on a phone that I would have as a holder of a driver's license. On the other end, and this is very important because it's a bookend process between devices, is what we call a verifier application. And this is the critical component here, because one device has the mobile driver's license, or the Smart ID as we call it. One device is the verifier. And what happens is those devices talk to each other using cryptographic exchanges. It's called PKI, which stands for Public Key Infrastructure. And basically what that means is it's just a set of standards and servers and security certificates, right, that handle encryption. So there's a set of standards. Mr. Samuel referenced AMVA. There's also another standards body behind this called ISO, which is the International Standards Organization. And they handle the technical part of this. But the way it works is there's an exchange between devices that's contactless. And I'm going to go in. I got four major points that I want to hit with this around security, around privacy, and around how it works. And I'll hit those with different use cases. But I wanted to explain first that it's about devices. So those are two pieces, two core pieces of what the Smart ID is. There's a third piece that you don't see on this, and I'll talk about that in a little bit too, and it's called a credential service provider. So this is a broker that's behind the scenes that actually serves the data and handles all the security between the devices. You don't see it. It's behind the scenes. It's one of the ways that Florida is unique in how we're implementing this, and we're on the cutting edge of this technology-wise. We're very excited about this. What we've decided to do is two use cases to start with this. There's many use cases, and I got another slide where I'm going to show you all these use cases. You can imagine there's a universe of different ways that you can use this. And everybody's running at us to try and implement different things. But what we learned in our modernization effort, as Mr. Samuel mentioned, is scope is very important in controlling scope. So we want to be successful with this. So we picked two use cases that we're starting with: age verification and law enforcement road stops. Okay? Those two use cases set the foundation for all the other use cases that we'll eventually do. We know there's a next phase of this. We're going to do many more things with the Smart ID, but we want to start out with a successful set of use cases, and those two will cover sort of the gamut. Now, before I go to the next one, let me hit these four points really quick. One is this is a contactless interaction. This is very important. So I don't have to hand my phone over to the verifier to be able to do this. And I'll give you a specific example. If I go in and I want to purchase liquor, right, I need to do an age verification. So the way that would work is I would walk in, I would present my device, the cashier would present their device as a verifier, there would be a QR code or some type of camera interaction where it basically signals how I can communicate with that verifier. This is what's illustrated there. That's that Bluetooth, NFC, or Wi-Fi connection. That's how the devices talk to each other. So what happens behind the scenes is there's a cryptographic handshake and a mathematical proof, if you will, that determines that I'm above 21 to complete that purchase. So that's contactless. This is very important for security, for privacy, but also in the current situation with the pandemic. Nobody wants to touch your phone, right? You don't have to with this. So that's one point. The next point is this consent-based. Very important. This is a key component of this solution. That means that I come in, the cashier can't grab my information. You can't pull from my phone. I have to signal that I'm doing an age verification, okay? This is very, very important. Nothing will happen. No data will get passed without me explicitly saying what I'm conveying. All the use cases are predicated on that. The other thing is data minimization, okay? So let's use the age verification as an example. I'm not passing data elements to the cashier behind the scenes. I'm actually passing a claim. I'm saying I'm above 21, so that's all they know. There may be a picture or a photo ID that also gets passed across the wire. It's minimized. That's what I mean by data minimalization. And the fourth point of this is we've actually designed this looking ahead. We know that there's going to be more use cases. There's going to be other state agencies that interact with this. All of the state agencies have to do identity proofing, whether it's FWC or ACCA or any of the other agencies. We know this is a need. So we've actually designed this thinking about that. We have the foundation or the framework to be able to do that with this device. Mr. Samuel mentioned the MyDMV portal, our public-facing portal. One of the ways that you can use the portal is with your phone. You'll be able to go to the portal and use your phone to log in instead of using credentials. So it's very exciting. There's a lot of things you can do with this. Let me go to some of the use cases here. Okay, so again, back to scope. We have two use cases. Even though you see a lot more up there, some of these, I won't go through every one. Car rentals, voting, airport security, number 11, and this isn't in order of priority, by the way. Number 11 is what I was mentioning about the other state agencies. What we're doing with this is number one and number two, law enforcement road stops and age verification. There's a third one there, too, about notifications. Mr. Samuel mentioned having more channels of communication. Well, this is another channel, right? This is another method for if something happens on my record, it will communicate with me via my mobile driver's license or smart ID. Again, this just to summarize some of the things I hit, the contactless interaction, safeguarding customers' personal information. This is front and fore for us. Transaction convenience, up-to-date driver status, access to additional services. This is the state agencies, healthcare, governmental agencies, et cetera. There's a lot of things that you can do with this that we're looking ahead for, but, we want to start out with those two use cases so we're successful. And with that, if you have any questions for Mr. Samuel or myself, we'll be glad to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Hutchinson. Do we have any questions? Vice Chair Rommel, you're recognized for a question.
Yeah, thank you very much, and thank you for your presentation. The person that's receiving the data, or that information from your ID, how do we protect the identification holder from using that data or storing that data for future use?
You're recognized.
Thank you. So one of the things that happens with the standards is there's a cryptographic exchange and there's a black box around that. There's no way for the application to get it without the explicit consent of the user. And there's also another non-technical way, a contract method, that the vendors that are providing a smart ID cannot expose any of that by contract. On top of that, the exchange across the wire that I mentioned when I showed those two devices, the smart ID and then the verifier, there's not data elements necessarily being passed there unless they're needed for the use case. And when they are passed, it's using that PKI infrastructure, using encryption to go across the wire. And the verifier is a pass-through mechanism. There's no storage on that verifier. It's literally just a check or a verification, if you will. Does that answer the question?
You got it. Do we have any other questions specifically to Mr. Hutchinson? I don't want them having to do hopscotch back and forth, okay? Representative Mooney, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A great presentation. It's pretty exciting. One question, though, coming out of the small business world, when we talk about walking into a grocery store and buying a bottle of wine or a liquor store, and I do this, what is the cost to the owner of that particular business? Are they going to have some kind of special device that they have to buy? And are you going to put that on their back?
You're recognized.
Thank you. That's an excellent question. So the core requirement for the smart ID is it's either an iOS device or an Android device. And there are certainly commodity devices. You don't have to go out and get an expensive iPhone to do it. There's actually a commodity device that we have, when we've met with retailers, we've actually conveyed that. The other option in regard to retailers is there's the ability, as long as they can meet those standards that I mentioned, they can certainly integrate with their point of sale systems too. And that's one of the things that we've talked with retailers about that are of the larger size. Obviously, they're more interested in more of an integrated flow, but they can certainly use a commodity device like a phone.
Representative Mooney for a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, so you hit the nail on the head there. For larger retailers, that's a wonderful world because they have the resources to pull this off. But this country is run by mostly small businesses in reality. And so now I have my ID here, and I don't have any physical ID. And like you said, any 13-year-old can Photoshop. So I walk into a grocery store and buy a bottle of wine, and all of a sudden I don't have my driver's license in my back pocket to show my age. What are we going to do? I mean, how are you going to make that seamless? But you can't just focus on large retailers and say that's great for them and everybody else is left out to dry. And so my concern is that I'm all for this, by the way. I love it. But I think that you need to have a little more thought process about everybody that can keep up. And I get it. We use our credit cards now, and they swipe it over the credit card machines. Would that be similar? Would be the same thing?
You recognize.
It certainly could be. But we've actually looked at both sides of this. The low end, to speak to what you're talking about, which would be more of a commodity device. Some of the retailers we talked to actually have devices, whether they're iPads or iPhones already, that they're using for part of their processes. They may choose to use that, or they may choose to purchase that very inexpensive commodity device, which is Android-based. That's on the low end. Certainly on the high end, we're not necessarily recommending that. That's more of the bigger retailers that would do integration. That would require them to do development work, too, by the way, to your point. So that would be a cost incurred on them if they choose to integrate that way at the retail level. But what we want to do is start out slow with this. And do we want to talk about any of the retailers that we've met with?
Yes, we've met with Racetrack. They're interested. We've met with some retailers around town in Tallahassee for the table, I believe. They also have places in, I believe, Fort Lauderdale. And we're constantly now trying to reach out through the Retail Federation and speak to more retailers. But to Chad's point, to the mom-and-pop shops, the smaller businesses, a simple phone, downloading that app can serve as your verifier to read it.
One more point on that, too. We actually studied this very, very deeply, too, as far as what happened, for example, with Apple Pay. You know, so we know it's a balance of momentum and cost. You know, and it's a chicken and the egg, too, right? So we want to get this moving with some momentum and some use cases, and then, you know, the Kevin Costner principle, right? Build it and they will come. We'll hopefully pick up with a lot of this.
Ranking Member Hart, you're recognized for a question.
Yes, thank you. You said that you all have, thank you very much, Chair, and thank you for your presentation. It was awesome. You did say that you all have not started marketing it yet, but you have about 15,000 people who are already signed on. Can you tell me a little bit about when you'll begin marketing and at what phase you'll start?
You're recognized.
Okay, thank you. Yes, and when I was talking about marketing, it was referring to the new customer portal. You're right. 15,000 accounts that have been created already simply from the letters that we sent out. We are probably going to start our marketing campaign with this probably sometime in May or beginning of June. We want to just take it slow. We want any bugs that we find, we want to have time to fix them without an influx of people. That's why we haven't started the marketing campaign yet. We want to make sure we're fixing things before we start that marketing campaign and ensure it's going to meet customers' needs.
Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hutchison, I want to shift our conversation a little bit away from the private sector and over to government implementation of some of these things. And I'm struck by the fact that we began today's meeting by hearing about how FDOT is still using cobalt. And now we're talking about something as bleeding edge as digital ID authentication. Several of us heard from DEO recently about how they have managed with the Connect system and identity management and partnering with a vendor called ID.me to verify identification. Looking forward, as you mentioned that this is an opportunity for state agencies to identify, to handle identity management, what would the implementation look like across other agencies to start using this?
You recognize.
Thank you, and that is an excellent example of exactly what I was thinking would provide identity services. Well, how this would look is, let me back up a little bit. We had previously met with former House Representative Jamie Grant, and one of the things Jamie Grant always had up on his wall was this identity wheel. He drew this big wheel, And at the center, right, see you laughing. It was excellent because this is exactly what we're setting the table for. There was a wheel with all these agencies and these identity management sort of processes, whereas in the middle, you have that credential service provider. Now, we, Highway Safety, would certainly be a part of that from the credential and identity piece. There might be other data exchanges, if you will, with other agencies that occur too. But I see that happening all behind a framework, a data framework, identity framework. So the implementation would look that way. It would be a web service-based identity management service that's provided to the agency. That could be in many forms. One could be a simple identity management, like I mentioned, the portal. That could be where I go to the portal and I'm just authenticating. There might be something more embedded in a specific workflow or process at an agency level, like what you mentioned. Does that answer?
It does. And just to be, thank you, Chair. Just to be very specific, I mean, what would, you know, putting your CTO hat back on, is it as simple as DEO changing a line of code in Connect to change from identity management through IDMe over to the digital driver's license?
You recognize?
Yes, because we're using open standards, and to be very specific technically, they would implement a standard called OpenID Connect, and they would use that to do the identity management. So they're probably using that with the vendor that they're looking at now. They would change that to our identity provider, which is exactly what we're gonna do in our public-facing portal. We're just gonna use ourselves as an identity provider, and you'll be able to use the mobile driver's license to authenticate.
Representative Bell, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure who would answer this, but I had a constituent reach out to me last week. He had sold a vehicle, traded it into a dealership, and the vehicle had never been sold or titled, and this has been 9 months ago. His insurance company was still wanting verification that he sold this vehicle because they were wanting to charge him. I contacted the tag office. He had to fill out a form, send it to Tallahassee. It would be 2 to 3 weeks before he could find out. With this new technology that we're talking about, the phase one, could a consumer or a person go on there and find out and get the information? Because I understand it was supposed to be private, and I couldn't even find out that information about the history of the vehicle or where it's gone. So would the consumer itself be able to log on to their computer and find out where that vehicle is?
You recognize.
Well, and I will probably get the details from you to give you a more specific answer, but I do know that there are cases within the customer portal that citizens will be able to log on to find out what certain requests are. That particular one, I'm not sure, but I will certainly be glad to get the details from you and get back with you to make sure if that's something that can be tracked in the portal. There are cases where we do allow you to track different sales or whatever. There's some things that we had in scope that we had to de-scope because of concerns with identity and making sure we can, you know, prove people properly. But that's something I can get back with you on.
Representative Bell for a follow-up.
No, thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Mr. Samuel, I know we've had you here for a while, but I did want to ask you, you talked a little bit about maybe things weren't always smooth through this process. Do you mind just hitting on that? Because we do have some new members, and a lot of this was early on in my legislative career too. Can you talk about some of the challenges getting this online, maybe from a 30,000 foot view, just so some of the newer members can hear about that process?
Yeah, I think early on, the first request that we made, the request was like $10.9 million. We received $2.5 million, and it was all because of trying to make sure the department was ready. There's always challenges around resources. In the beginning, the legislature wanted to make sure that we were going to be able to do this resource-wise, and we still have issues with resources that we have to deal with as well. There are challenges with onboarding the SI vendor. There are challenges with, you know, vetting all of those people out properly and getting to the right vendor to come on board to help with that. Then again, like I said, the assessment report. At the time, we probably were like, well, we got to go through this assessment report. But it really helped us to identify those areas that that we were lacking in and helping us get to the point that we felt like we could, that we could move forward. And I'm trying to, I think that's really it. It's just trying to, the other challenge is always trying to balance on the operational side of the house. You've constantly got federal mandates. There's new legislation every year. You're trying to balance that with another group that you're trying to keep over here focus on the modernization effort. Whenever something happens on the modernization side of the, on the operational side of the house, because that's the system that's public facing at this time, at the time, that's always going to get priority. So whoever's needed to move from the modernization side of the house to go help on this, it's going to happen because it's public facing. So trying to balance that has been one of those challenges in the very beginning we've had to deal with as well.
Well, we appreciate you being here today. I mean, this was quite the undertaking that y'all have had over the last several years, and it seems like you've done a very good job. And I think, you know, we kind of, as we moved forward, we kind of backed up and looked at things and, you know, let's back up and maybe punt and then let's look, which often sometimes in government we get too far into something and think, well, we just got to keep, we have to keep going, keep going, keep going, and we don't step back. And sometimes it is good to step back and look at things, take a little bit of time and look at things. And I think that's what happened with this project, and it's led to the product being a good product. And that's, members, that's kind of today too, why having this presentation, having the presentation with DOT, you know, let's look at all, anything, whether it's this committee or any of the committees that we have, don't always think that we just, that we can't step back and look and make sure the money that we're spent. You have a project like this, $80 million or so in total, the DOT project that was presented earlier, $200 million is a lot of money. We want to make sure that we're getting the value for the taxpayers that we represent. This was a great presentation today. I appreciate you being here. I thought it was pretty interesting that you showed up and you're showing up in Santa Rosa County right as you're presenting in front of me. It sounds like you kind of know what you're doing a little bit, but I do appreciate you being in Milton here over the next couple of weeks, and I appreciate you being here today.
All right. Thank you.
Yes, sir. All right, members, that's going to bring us to our favorite part of the, or not our favorite part, but one of our favorite parts of the agenda, and that's going to be the consent agenda. We're going to move into our appropriations project bills. We're going to take up the consent agenda and vote once on the agenda in its entirety. We will not take up question, debate, and vote on each of the bills individually. Instead, we're going to have questions and debate only once. And remember that you may vote no on any particular bill by submitting a nay vote consent agenda form with our staff before the vote. With that being said, are there any questions on the consent agenda?
Mr. Chairman, for a question.
You are recognized, Representative Drake.
General purposes, can we submit a no vote after the committee meeting has adjourned, or does it have to be while we're here?
Representative Drake, it has to be before the vote, which is really kind of the purpose of us putting this at the end of the meeting. So that's why I've got, instead of doing it at the beginning, I've been putting it towards the end.
So it couldn't be like a vote change. Sometimes we'll do that after a floor vote. We could make a modification. Is that not an option that's available?
No, sir, not on these, on the consent agenda.
Okay, thank you.
We have any other questions? Do we have any other questions on the consent agenda? All right. Public testimony. We have a few appearance cards. We have Sam Wagner waving in support of HB 2429. We have Tyler Bell waving in support of HB 2029. We have Tyler Bill waving in support of HB 2031. And we have, and it's Taylor Bell, waving in support of HB 2417. And that is all the appearance cards that we have today. Is there debate? Seeing no debate. Before I call the vote, are there any nay vote forms on the consent agenda? All right, there are no forms. All right, Ms. Sabrina, please call the roll on the consent agenda.
Chair Williamson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Romo?
Yes.
Representatives Arrington?
Yes.
Bell?
Yes.
Casella?
Yes.
Cheney?
Yes.
Daley? Drake?
Yes.
Ranking Member Hart?
Yes.
Representatives Lamarca?
Yes.
McFarland?
Yes.
Mooney?
Yes.
Persons Maluka?
Yes.
Placencia?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Chair, we have 14 yeas, 0 nays.
All right, members, by your vote, show that the consent agenda passes. All of the bills on the consent agenda will be reported favorably. All right, members, now we have come to our favorite part of the agenda. That concludes our committee for today. Seeing that there is no other business that comes before our committee, Representative Cheney moves, we rise, and without objection, we are adjourned.